little bit of the Russians and Sting. Love that music, wow. So the clock is ticking and there are dogs barking downstairs. That means that a walkie is definitely in the offing. Let's hear the dogs barking in the background, can you? Hello, I'm Julie Mullen, and indeed this is the Cake Hill Show. Look, the cake shop door has just flown open and a beautiful little scone with cream and some jam has appeared. Thank you, Colin Large. Really, the service here is extraordinary. And a cappuccino. Thank you so much. Colin, I mean, come and say something.
Oh, no, I'm too nervous. No, please, just have the scone and get back to your microphone.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Colin. Thank you so much. That's Colin Large, our in-house engineer. He's in our bubble, in the house, in Totnes. And indeed, let me tell you, I am actually broadcasting live from the cat litter room. I kid you not. And I always do a kind of fragrancy test. No, this morning it's quite good. It is actually quite good. So, Frank, take us off, would you? Could you? Take us off. Thank you.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you.
Frank, you are amazing. So, Frank just flying me to the moon. And you? So, hello, Totnes. How on earth are you? It's that day, isn't it? It's the day we look forward to when all the market is alivened with fabulous stores. So, hello, Totnes, and hello, dear Dartington. I hope you are all fully dressed with your aftershave and your perfume and your gaiety, really. Thanks, Frank Sinatra. That was amazing. So, yes, all the locals that can do the kind of just, I'm going to put my radio on and listen to the 102.5 Sound Art Radio, the Cake Hole Show. Thank you so much. But you could be much further afield across the world. And actually, yesterday, we had the amazing poet Rebecca Gethin, and her family in Australia were listening. Let's do some dings. Hang on. So Maisie and co were listening. So that was very exciting. And it was great to have Rebecca on the show. And also we've had what a week. We've had Gemma Ensenat, who is a presenter and just popped a baby a little while back. And we've had Jilly Smith, podcaster queen, from Cooking the Books on, that's her podcast. It's getting really famous. All these A-lister cooks. Awesome. And we've had Judy Lee. Oh my God, she had us absolutely rolling in the aisles with her welly wanging. So she's written 7 books and Rebecca's written 7 poetry books. We just have this kind of like, it's a bit like we've come together, this gang of women this week. It's been great. We love it. Yay. And today we have got 2 rather awesome poets. I remember being in Los Angeles some years ago and I walked into a shop and this young girl said to me, "Oh my God, your jacket, that's just awesome." And when I heard that word, a small part of me just died inside. I was like, "Awesome? What a dreadful word. How dare you?" Because now I'm using awesome. Apologies for that. Anyway, we have got the rather awesome Rosie Jackson and also our regular poet in residence, Liv Talk. So more dings. But meantime, I think we need a bit of art pop, don't you? Hey, come on. You know you love it.
Come to me.
That was Lady Gaga. Oh my God, Gaga. You came to our rescue. Thank you. I mean, as much as I love Sting, and I really do like Sting, and I adore Mr. Frank Sinatra, but you brought it up to the minute, haven't you, Gaga? You even mentioned poetry. What are you like? Our fabulous Lady Gaga and art pop. I chose that because Rosie Jackson, She's a bit of a Fantasimondo girl out there. Is she a girl or a woman? She's a woman. She loves her collaborations. She's done tons of things with art and music and poetry. And recently, actually, she moved from Froome to Devon, actually, last autumn. So we have pulled her in, everybody. We've got Rosie Jackson in our thrall. She is in the palm of our hands. So she has, oh golly, won poetry prizes. My goodness. And she actually came to my attention. I'd heard of her anyway on Facebook, but she recently won the first prize at Tynmouth. So let's do a few more bills and bells. She's won so many prizes. The Stanley Spencer competition, the Poetry Space, Acumen. I mean, first, second and third prizes. What's she like? We're going to get to the bottom of Rosie Jackson and indeed to find out how she ticks as a poet, what goes on in her mind, what's happening all at 9:20. And then at 9:45, we've got another Froomian in the shape of Liv Talk, who's not at home. She's going to be calling us on 4G. So that's going to be interesting. We've had a week of technicals. And when it goes right, it's great. But when it goes wrong, it's scary. Should we have the death of an interior decorator? And that has to be weird, doesn't it? Let's check it out. Intriguing. Death of an Interior Decorator. I just love that title. And that was by Death Cab for Cutie. Never heard of them. Like to play different types of music. So if you've just tuned in, yep, this is the Kate Cole Show on 102.5 FM. Sound Art Radio. Putting the C in community. So you could be anywhere in the world. You could be in Florence, Firenze in Italy, or you could be in Aix-en-Provence or Madrid, or maybe you're in Australia, like yesterday, or maybe a little bit closer in the UK, Chelsea, Crouch End, or Wolverhampton. Maybe you're in Wolverhampton, or you, or all. Well, we've got a lovely, delicious, delicious poet coming up for you, Una Memento, at 9:20, and she is widely published, lots of in journals and anthologies, and poetry collections include What the Ground Holds, The Light Box, Two Girls and a Beehive, poems about Stanley Spencer and Hilda Carline. That was co-written with Graham Birchall, Two Rivers Press. But you can head to her website, which will be flagging up at the end of the programme, after you've heard from Rosie Jackson, poetry and some chat. Why on earth did she move from the Somerset area to Devon? We need to ask her, don't we? But this woman loves collaborations. Oh, I like a good collaboration myself. So I'm going to get to the bottom. I'm going to get to the bottom of all of it and find out what goes on in that mind of Rosie Jackson's. I just threw my scone on the floor. Let's have a little bit of thoughts. Oh, I don't think we will, actually. Oh, that sounded a little bit scary. We're having something else to take us up to the hour of 9:20. This feels like sci-fi music, doesn't it? I had to play the bit of the song that had swearing in it, didn't I? It's almost like I'm, you know, drawn to it. It's got a swear word in it, I play it, right? And you're not allowed to. Anyway, I hope it wasn't that clear. Oops. This is good music for Rosie Jackson. This is enigmatic. Right, let's get Messenger. God, I can't multitask. Oh, it's ringing.
Hi, Julie.
Hello, good morning, Rosie Jackson. I've been playing some very enigmatic music as your entry music. So we're all dying to know who you are.
Hi.
I flagged you up because you have won so many prizes. Oh, my goodness. And I hope to be asking towards the end of the programme about your secrets.
Okay.
We need to know. But also, you seem to be fantastic at working with other people, forming collaborations. Let's just put that aside for one moment and just say welcome to Devon, because you've just moved recently from Frome.
How does
it feel to be here?
Well, it's been very strange because moving in the midst of lockdown is not the best circumstance, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
We've not been able to meet many people, done lots of Zooming. I love Devon. I mean, the landscape is amazing. So we're on West Dartmoor, just near Tavistock at the moment. And, you know, we've done masses of walking on Dartmoor. Oh, so many rivers, so much water.
Yeah.
You know, it's just beautiful. We live near the River Tamar, so it's been fantastic. But yes, we're looking forward to actually meeting people.
Oh, God, most definitely. I feel exactly the same way. Now, but was it a wrench to actually leave your wonderful Somerset and Frome?
Well, I'd been in Somerset for 21 years and in Frome, I should say, for 21 years, in Somerset for 30 years. And I just wanted an adventure. And yes, it was a wrench leaving friends, but, you know, it's not that far away. We can still go back and be in touch. So,
Absolutely. So you arrived in Devon and then just completely, with amazing aplomb, bagged the first prize at Tynmouth. So we will talk about that later. But I just want to ask you, Rosie, about your wonderful collaborations. Can you kind of expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, well, I mean, like most people, I'd started off, you know, working in isolation, writing on my own, you know, the notion of the romantic writer in the garret kind of thing. But in Frome, there was a wonderful network of creatives. And gradually I started linking up with people. I worked with the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment on some poems for in a school. I worked in Dorset. I was working for healthcare. I was running cancer patient workshops in Dorchester Hospital, and through that I collaborated with a wonderful letter carver sculptor called Andrew Whittle, and we made a beautiful sculpture in the grounds of hospital in Dorchester with one of my poems. And then I've collaborated with photographers, filmmakers, other writers. So Gordon McHero, who's a filmmaker in Langport, we've done a poetry film about Barbara Hepworth based on one of my poems. I just find that working with other people takes you out of yourself, gives you different perspectives, you know, and also working in different media I like, because just staying with words all the time can be quite narrow. You know?
Yeah, oh, I think that's really exciting, really exciting. We had a little sort of film that we put together just in December of last year when we were out of lockdown for a nanosecond. But I've never done that before. And I have to say, I was completely thrilled by putting it together and getting the Arts Council funding through the Barrel House. So it was all very local, but just, you know, working with other people, I quite agree with you. It just,
well, the other project we did just a few months before lockdown, there was a group of artists who worked in Shepton Mallet Prison, and we did some installations of art and poetry, and that worked really well working with others there. So, yeah, it's just a fantastic thing to do, networking.
Absolutely.
Like that.
Tell me about Graham Birchall and that collaboration.
So Graham's a poet in South Devon, and we both were working on poems about the artist Stanley Spencer, and we decided to collaborate on a book together. So we wrote poems separately and then put them all together at the end, and it was interesting, they kind of divided down a gender line. So so Graham did a lot of poems about the war, the First World War, and Spencer working in industry, etc. And I focused more on his relationships with his two wives, which were very problematic, and the gender politics of all that. So it was a really nice collaboration, because the book, if it had just been mine, it would have been much narrower. Whereas doing it together, we had these double perspectives on everything. So it's great.
A great depth to it and exploration. That's amazing. Can we have some poetry, actually? Because I really feel
Let me read you one from that book first. So the book is called Two Girls and a Beehive.
Okay.
And that is the title of Stanley Spencer's first oil painting. And it's a picture of two girls from Cookham, where he lived. But because I focused on his relationships with his wives. His first wife was Hilda Carline, who was a fantastic artist in her own right. But after their marriage and various disastrous events in their relationship, when eventually they got divorced, her artistic output completely declined and became almost zero. And I wrote this poem just to explore that, because I think it says a lot about what happens to a lot of women, or has done historically. A lot of women have either been silenced or made invisible through more famous partners. So this one is called The Paintings That Didn't Happen. The paintings that didn't happen hang in a studio down a side street, perhaps an old shop. The walls faded around their frames. Large canvases, her best work, undaunted by failure or the muzzle of gender. At night, she dreams of finding them in an auction. Women who prefer secrets over sleep. Children's faces wiser than the Buddha. They stare back at bidders like the soul seeks God. Here are fig trees the size of houses, fields of dandelion that never turn to seed. She is especially proud of the flamboyant nudes, gentle wrinkles on their everlasting skin, swans rising from the river, almond blossom falling onto lovers as they couple on the ground.
Wow, thank you for that. Wow. I'm going to have to get that book, aren't I? I'm spending so much money on poetry books. Yesterday,
yes.
I had Rebecca on. I'm like, oh, can I order your Vanishings? Can I order? So, well, our house is absolutely awash with poetry books, I can tell you that.
Lovely.
Much.
Yeah. Lovely. So is mine.
So now tell me, you have also collaborated with Dawn Gorman. Actually, was very friendly to me so many years ago, invited me to the gig there. And that must be at least 10 years ago or more, probably.
Yes, she's still running her wonderful evening Words and Ears. Well, she's doing them on the radio at the moment, but yes, those are wonderful events. They happen in Bradford-on-Avon.
Yeah, that's right. It was in Bradford-on-Avon, that's where I met her. And also, later on, I bumped into her at the Edinburgh Festival, where she was collaborating with Liz Watts.
Yes.
So I love all these collaborations. Now, tell me about your collaboration on Aloneness is a Many-Headed Bird with...
Well, a competition came up at Hedgehog Press, which is based in Bristol, and the brief was to write a dialogue between two poets on any theme and enter that for the competition. And we decided to work together, did 20 poems, each one in response to the one before. And we were lucky enough to win the competition. Wow. So they published our pamphlet. And we started off with the theme of thinking about women of a certain age, aging, and themes of loss, mortality, and what's happening to the planet and our heart, because we're both very passionate worriers about the planet.
Mm.
If I could read one of the poems from there. So,
yes, please.
While I was writing these poems with Dawn, one of my dear friends who was in one of my poetry workshops very suddenly died out of the blue. She suddenly died in her sleep, and she just turned 60, and I wrote this poem as a result, and this is called The Light We Can't See. My friend Linda, a poet, died unexpectedly this week. She was 10 years younger than me. I keep seeing her that afternoon at one of my classes, when a mallard had wandered onto my back lawn, God knows why. Linda was the one who knew how to approach it, talk to it, coax it into a box and take it home to her pond. She was practical like that. The shock of mortality changes things, makes them clearer. Scissors black silhouettes against sunlight like a daguerreotype. For years, I wanted to be like a man, to put my feet under their privileged table. Now I'm happy to not belong, to spend my time wresting mercy from its opposite, beauty from mud and grit. I don't care anymore who wears the medals or feathers. I'm just thankful to have arrived at the harvest of myself, to have come through, able to look back on all the wounding as someone trying to stab water. And when I think of Linda, I can't help catching some exuberance, as if death is the same kind of excitement that comes each morning when darkness lifts. That simple happiness.
That's an incredibly beautiful poem. I love that connection you made with the mallard and just the language in that poem, and also the shock of someone dying, you know, in their sleep. And that's always been profoundly alarming in my head. I sometimes say goodnight to my husband and say, goodnight, I'll see you in the morning, maybe, you know, sort of, but it is, a reality. It does happen to people.
That's what we've learned in the last year, isn't it? We never know what's around the corner. You never know what's happening. Yeah.
So tell me, do you have any other collaborations in mind at all, Rosie?
Yes, I've got a couple coming up, which I'm quite excited about. So Gordon McKerrow, the filmmaker in Langport, and I, we've been invited, even commissioned, to do a poetry film in South Moulton, North Devon, based around the town to celebrate the town in words and images. So we've started working on that. We're inviting local people there to send in writing and images that we will make into a collective poetry film. And I should say that's partly inspired by Liv Talk, who I know is on your show, because her High Flu project with Words and Images Together was so fantastic and involved so many people. It was a wonderful inspiration. And then I'm doing another collaborative project with a fantastic composer who is in Frome called Helen Ottaway, and we're going to be working on some kind of requiem in response to all the losses from the pandemic and from climate change. So that'll be a longer term project over the next couple of years.
God, that sounds absolutely so vital, so much vitality in those collaborations. I absolutely love it that you're doing all of that. Well, good luck with all of those projects, definitely. That sort of brings me up to my next question, which is about a direct response to lockdown. Did you manage to create any poems in that sort of form?
Yes, I did. I did at the beginning of last year. So last spring, a year ago now, I did a whole series of poems in response to lockdown. And there's about 20 of those that are hopefully going to be published later this year. And I could read you one of those. Some
yes,
of them
please.
Went on to a wonderful website that Carol Ann Duffy began, which is part of Manchester University website. And there's lots of wonderful lockdown poems in there from all kinds of famous poets. And it's called Right Where We Are Now. And some went in anthologies. This one has just appeared in an anthology called Poems for the Year 2020. And Yeah, this is called A Drop in Temperature. My new man's watching birds through his binoculars. Blackcap, firecrest, as they crisp into view, along with seas of a nearly ripe white moon. But I'm seeing the blue wings of sorrow, blurred from weeping and too little sleep. Cross the stream where it is shallowest, they say, and soul after soul is crossing now, while the tide is out. So many souls, rosaries can't tell quick enough. Even archangels struggle to keep up. Titles mean nothing now, wifelets, estates, nor will the arms of the kissing gates let anyone back through. It helps me, though, to think of them as birds, these souls rising in their thousands from solitary beds, murmurations huddled in reeds of the afterlife as they shelter each other from the unexpected drop in temperature, land in pairs or handfuls on telegraph wires, share how it was.
Thank you for that, Rosie. And also thank you for drawing the attention to, you know, Caroline Duffy's Manchester website, you know, for the listeners, particularly, mm-hmm. and for myself. I have to say, I didn't know anything about it. So thank you for that poem. And also, mm-hmm. You know, I love those little sort of comments, because it can draw you on a bit of a journey doing that kind of research and looking for lockdown poetry. I think it's very calming, isn't it? And consoling to have those words, particularly the words you've just spoken, in your mind, and also just as a release to what is and has been going on. But it must have been incredibly strange for you moving to Devon in lockdown. How on earth did you handle the nitty-gritty of people coming to your cottage and packing, you know, packing your stuff up and having movers come in and then coming to Devon? What came from that in your emotional mind?
Well, it's interesting. It's created a kind of strange non-attachment, I think. I mean, ironically, the house hasn't worked out too well, so we'll be moving on again soon.
Oh, really?
But still in Devon, I think, I hope. But no, I think we've all been asked to face change so hugely, haven't we, this last year?
Mm.
And I have to say, Zoom, etc., has been such a godsend. So I linked in with all the poets in South Devon who work through Poetry Tynmouth, which is a wonderful group of poets. So they've had a weekly Zoom every Thursday afternoon just to read poems, both of their own and other people. That's I think amazing. We forget that reading poems is as therapeutic as writing them, actually.
Yes. Yeah,
you know,
most definitely.
It's lovely to just read poems. So Devon's treated me very well. So, yes, I managed to win the Poetry Tynmouth competition, which was astonishing. I've also won third prize in the Acumen competition.
Yeah,
they're based down in Brixham, so that's been wonderful. So
you have secrets up your sleeve that all the listeners are going to be gagging at the bit. Come on, how does Rosie Jackson do it? So we need to have a few of your secrets, please.
Well, my tips are for winning competitions. I focus them very clearly for specific competitions and specific judges.
Ooh.
So this last competition at Tynmouth was judged by Helen Ivory, who's a poet in Norfolk.
Yep.
And I know she has a slight, she's interested in surrealism and, no, she's very visual, she's an artist as well. And so I deliberately chose a poem I'd got that you know, that felt along those lines. So I always target them very specifically. It's like, you know, playing darts or something. You take the one that you think will reach that particular board. I very rarely, the very big competitions like the National, which has like 18,000 entries, I tend to avoid because it's like gambling a bit too far. But I did enter it, didn't get anywhere on that this year. But, you know, I mean, Tynmouth had 1,100 entries. So, you know, it's pretty to win that.
Yeah, golly.
But I think the secret is to, you know, always only send in your best work and target it for the judge and the competition. And I think it's better to go in for smaller competitions that you have more chance of winning because they've got lower entries than to go for just the very big ones, even though they've got very seductive, you know, prizes.
Yeah, no, so, that's really good. That's very good information. Ooh, we like that information. Now, we've got to hear that poem, otherwise we'll gasp.
Okay, so this poem... That's won first prize at Tynmouth. I wrote just before moving. I was very excited to find this house near Tavistock in the middle of nowhere, actually next to the forest, the Tamar forest. I kind of put together lots of different images that kind of jump over each other and mingle together in a dreamlike way. So I'll read that now.
Okay.
It's called Light Makes It Easy. You're moving at last. It's a place you saw once in a dream. Blue sky, white house, long slope of grass. It's how, if you could live on after your body, you might shape the afterlife. Pears are about to fall. Poems come flooding in. Stars tell you of the beauty, the necessity of transit. You don't care about anything you've lost. This is your home now. Chairs floating under the vines. Paths white with salt. You never thought you could pack up your old walls so easily. You've never been so ready to let go. The stones of your old life are on their knees. The kitchen table must be left behind. The king-sized bed is too large. But you no longer want space inside, only outside, where apples are falling, blackberries stud the hedgerow. Let no one throw cold water. You know now you are mortal. Your clutter is so much punctuation. How clear the light makes things. In the distance you can see the needle's eye. How good to let your possessions go. How good to leave behind all power but the power of trees. To lean towards your words, your silences, your sweet earthly body, your home that nests in this place between field and forest, like the foretaste of the afterlife, like something you glimpsed once in a dream, a blossom of rain, petals falling.
Absolutely beautifully read, and a beautiful poem too.
Thank you.
We have run out of time, but I want to flag up your website, which is www.rosiejackson.org.uk. Now, can you tell me what is on the site for people to go and buy your books? Tell me the books you're selling there.
So, on my website, you can find my email address, and to buy any of the books, you can email me. So there's my first book, The Light Box. There's the pamphlet with Dawn, Aloneness is a Many-Headed Bird. And there's the book about Stanley Spencer poems and Hilda Spencer, written with Graham Birchall, called Two Girls and a Beehive. And some of them, the last two are also, well, they're also on Amazon, but it would be nice to get them directly from me. So we'd be very grateful if you'd buy any of those.
Absolutely. Thank you. Brilliant. Thank you so much for being our programme today, Rosie Jackson, and all the very best with your next move. I'll be interested. I'm sure you're coming to Totnes. That's where you'll move to. But I hope to meet you one of these fine days. But congratulations on all your successes and all the projects and collaborations.
Thanks, Julie.
And yeah, see you in real life one of these days. Okay.
Yes. Thanks very much, Julie.
Okay. Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye
bye. Rosie Jackson. Thank you, Rosie Jackson, for that. Wow. Whew. Oh, God, I'm reeling from poetry. Absolutely wonderful. Now let's have Ballerina, shall we? Until we meet with Liv Talk.
You should have seen her, she was great. Scared off by talents and buns who could balance an art with an impossible weight. My body is a relic of an untrained ballerina. Quit at 5, you should have seen her, she was great. Waste all my money on books that I won't read. Still stories look pretty on my dusty shelf. And I keep shit talking the girls I respect. Cause I'm not far away from who I was at 12. I'm a mess in a dress, just short of a college degree. I could never. I'm safe and I'm stuck.
'Cause I spent my whole allowance on the taste. So I preach all my opinions, always talking, never listen, looking for that little girl I've erased. Waste all my money on books that I won't read. Still stories look pretty on my dusty shelf, and I keep shit talking the girls I
We know how to win poetry competitions now. Thank you, Rosie Jackson. That was very exciting. Ooh, must be amazing to have won so many competitions. We've got Liv Talk, who is parked by the road at Budgeon's Garage. Let's get her on, shall we? So she'll definitely know Rosie Jackson. Oh, we've got to say goodbye to our ballerina, and that was Raffaella. Thank you, Raffaella. Oh, now Liv Talk, you're near Budgeon's, are you?
I'm near Budgeon's, yes, on an industrial estate outside Froome. I know the places I get to.
You're so glamorous. What's going on?
I know, right? I know. I am wearing red lipstick and a hat. What's going on? Well, I'm actually in rehearsals. I've basically just hired a village hall, and me and my lovely director are there working on the Highflew show.
Wow.
And I was just so desperate for a coffee before I start this morning that I was trying to work out if I could get a coffee and do the radio interview and still get to the rehearsal for 10. So I thought if I did the radio interview in Budgeon's car park, I could have a coffee as well.
You are a miracle worker, and we love your life. Wow. So tell me a little bit more about who is your director then?
Oh, well, it's actually my old poetry partner in crime, whose poetry name is Beryl the Feral, but Rosie Hilton, who's from Totnes, who people in Totnes will know well, I'm sure.
Yeah,
who knows my work very well and is very good at sort of putting together shows. So she's come down to help me do that. So we're at the beginning of the process at the moment. So, but it's nice. We've got this stage. We entered this village hall. It smelled a bit mouldy. We were like, oh my goodness, a stage! Climbed up on the stage. Quite exciting. It's been a long time. So yeah, no, it's really nice to hang out with her because haven't been able to for so long. So.
Oh, that's actually, it feels like the opening up is really happening, not just mentally, physically, but spiritually, isn't it? That connection,
yes,
with a good friend. Not only that,
yes,
we've just had Rosie Jackson on the programme and she was talking about collaborations quite a lot. So it's fantastic to continue the theme on, and that you're right there in the heart of it all. And starting your project.
I'm looking at the cast iron makeshift buildings all around me, and I'm hoping this isn't the heart of it.
Well, I was talking inside.
I'm definitely in the heart of something, yes.
Yeah.
So
have you got any poetry up your sleeve for us? Are you too
with coffee? I've got some books here. I'm going through my back catalogue slightly this morning.
Yeah.
So if that's okay.
Yeah.
This is a poem that I love performing and perform a lot, and it's called Family Bed. And it's about that wonderful, if you've ever had children and you have to spend a lot of time with them in your bed, and how disgusting this gets. Also how absolutely exhausted you are all the time. So basically, if one of them throws up in your bed in the middle of the night, as happens, you just put a towel over it and go back to sleep.
Oh, no.
I mean, I mean, that's basically what it's like, Julie. And this poem starts with some Kennings, which I know are John Hegley's favourites.
Yes.
And yes, the sort of two-word descriptions, it sort of goes from there. But yeah, family bed. Well, before I start this, just to say, I was at a festival once and a woman came up to me afterwards and told me that she'd cut out like a half a metre square of her family bed and framed it and put it on the wall as to in kind of memory of this amazing thing, part of her life, which I thought was really disturbing.
Yeah, so, that is disturbing.
Yeah, it's a terrible one, isn't it? So, moon doily, snot sponge, bum scratcher, crumb clinger, full body tantrum flinger, softly, softly tuneless singer, humdinger. This bed is a protest in defiance of sleep. It paddles the shallows when you long to plunge deep. This bed is a jungle with creepers and croaks. It billows and belches and emits tornadoes of smoke. This bed is a rickety raft on a rag-rugged river, forging upstream to the milk-splattered sea. This bed is a life form we will one day set free. This bed is a cave where wolves creep and curl up in packs of panting paws to sleep. This bed is a den nestled deep in the earth. It's full of insects and mud and the soft blood of birth. It has elbows and kneecaps and fuzz swirls of hair. It has wet wipes and snot stains and toys it won't share. This bed is uncuttable in a room they can't tax. It's all coughing and cuddles and noses nestled in backs. This bed is a lighthouse when the dark rages outside and tiny feet patter from nightmares to snuggle safe at our side. This bed is a handbrake turn on a budget magic carpet ride. It is cozy and crowded and shallow and deep. It is desperately tired, but a long way from sleep. This bed is restrictive and hard to stretch out. It's all whinging and shushing and flailing about. It has toddlers and babies and breast leaking life. It has a man hanging helpless, not touching his wife. Our bed was for lovers full of sweet, sweaty sighs, stickiness slick on staccato thighs. This bed is for parents with no chance of parole. It has plundered our faces and swallowed us whole, poured us out like batter into a pan, one crispy fried woman, one burnt brittle man. This bed is our children. It's us and it's them hanging on in there and counting to 10. This bed is a journey we're too tired to make. Our eyes deliberately closed, though we're always awake. This bed is a blip in a life full of lazing. This bed is disgusting. This bed is amazing. A moment, some seconds, a fistful of time. A memory so liquid it will spill down the years to be served up with tea in my old lady's tears. It's my howl, my heartbreak, my wolf mother's shout. But right now, it's just minging, so I'm gonna get out.
Oh my God. That has to be the best bed poem I've ever heard in my life. It's so vivid, it's too vivid, Liv. I might have nightmares about that bed.
The bed itself was quite vivid. It's not quite like that anymore, fortunately.
I haven't cut out
a piece of it.
No.
I'm just trying to think how much time do I have, Julie, so I can decide on my.
Okay, so we've got about 2 more minutes.
Oh, 2 more minutes. Oh, okay. Goodness. So,
don't worry if you go a little bit over. It's all right.
I know, but I'm just trying to find one that's suitable, Julie.
Don't you worry. Tell me, actually, let's go back to your Wilf and your Matilda. So do they ever say to you, Mummy, I want to be a poet like you. I want to be a performer like you, Mummy. Or do they say, I wouldn't do that for all the tea in China? Tell me what they say. Are they too young?
I think Matilda might lean towards the singing, actually. She's pretty good at that. But they're not quite old enough yet to decide. They just think poetry and musicianship as a daddy is really a normal thing. So I found one. I found a poem that... But this is called Thank You.
Okay.
And this is to my husband, love him, after the giving birth of my first daughter.
Okay.
Thank you for washing my hair in the grey grot of the hospital bathroom and for taping electrodes to my back as I shook on all fours with my huge belly hanging over sagging red pyjamas. And thank you for untangling the wires when they got stuck in the buttons of my cardigan. and for playing Who Wants to Be a Millionaire on your iPad to distract me from the contractions, which, by the way, were the only reason I kept losing the big money questions. And after 4 days when I couldn't stop crying, thank you for climbing into my tiny single bed and breathing my breath. And thank you for sitting for hours in torturous chairs and for driving to the hospital 3 times in one night and nearly 100 miles an hour down the A36 and for missing a week of work, even though you had a really important concert and we needed the money. And thank you for stroking my feet very lightly as the epidural touched my spine and for helping to clean up all the blood and shredded bits of me, despite the fact that you're really squeamish and you hate that sort of thing. And thank you for actually looking at the head crowning. I never thought you would, and I never thought I'd want you to. And thank you for holding our daughter skin to skin inside your favourite blue shirt and for crying on the phone to your mum as you fed me with smash from a fork. And thank you for realising that I'm made of stronger stuff than you previously suspected. And thank you for proving that to me too.
Oh my God. On that note, thank you, Liv Talk. Really, you always bring me to my little emotional knees.
That's what I'm here for.
Oh my God. I'm like, oh, that is honestly, that's made my day. Thank you for that poem.
Oh, that was so. This has made my day. Thank you for,
What's that?
A Froome Industrial Estate appreciates this moment or two.
I bet it does. Will you give a big kiss to Beryl? Well, you can't. Maybe a sort of socially distant sort of handshake from a distance to Beryl the Feral from me in Totnes.
Of course I will.
Say hello to her. Say she's got to come on the programme, please. And
I will, yeah.
And have the most amazing time on this project, Liv Talk. You need your very own show on Radio 4. And we
I do. I think I might need my very own agent, actually.
You need your very own agent. And there we are. We're gonna sort it. Okay, together we shall get you sorted.
Yeah. All right.
But meantime, you're amazing. Thank you so much. Goodbye.
Thanks, Julie.
Loads of love.
Bye for now. See you next week. Bye.
See you next week. Bye-bye. That's our poet in residence, Liv Talk. Wow, what a programme we've had today. Well, all week, to be honest. I just wanted to say a huge thank you to poet Rosie Jackson. And honestly, of such a warm welcome to Devon for you. And do look her up. I shall get another little mention of her website in a sec. Thank you so much to our poet in residence, Liv Talk. But honestly, all week it's just been va-va-voom. And it has been a huddle of women, and I've loved it. Rebecca Gethin, oh my God, she had me hooting with her stories, but poetry, I've ordered the books. That says it all, doesn't it, really? And who else? We've had Jilly Smith, and she has a fantastic podcast, Cooking the Books. We've had novelist Judy Lee. Welly Wanging. On it goes. And Gemma Ensenat, presenter and maker and blogger. My God. What can we go out with? I'm going to put a little bit of Dog Days Are Over and find Rosie Jackson's website to remind you.
She hid under beds. She came.
So if you want more information about our poet in residence, it's Liv Torc, that's L-I-V, and her surname is T-O-R-C, livtorc.co.uk. And now, Rosie Jackson. Rosie Jackson, www.rosiejackson.org.uk. And you can email Rosie and order books personally from her, although she did say that they were on the big A, the big Amazon. But much better to make contact with Rosie personally and buy them from the poet. I've had such a wonderful time this morning. Thank you to the very special guests. And I'll be back, not on Bank Holiday Monday. There's probably going to be a repeat, but I'll be back on Tuesday. See you there. Loads of love.
Run fast!